Welcome back to Greenwash with me, Jaspreet Boparai, and my co-host, Don Nicholson. And as I say, welcome back, it does strike me all as being rather new. After a year of doing this, this should be routine, but it's amazing how quickly this middle-aged brain seems to forget a whole lot of things, Don.
Well, if it's hard for you, what do you think it's like for me?
I know, but let's get things cracking. So our first guests today are ladies from CAM, Capiti CAM, which stands for, the CAM stands for Calm, Alarmist, Lob, Madness. Is that right, ladies?
Law Madness, that's right.
Yeah. So here we have with us in the studio, Kerry Evans and Tanya Lees. Welcome to Greenwashed. And thank you so much for giving us your time.
Hey, welcome back to the airwaves.
It is good to be back. Gosh. And there is so much to talk that I'm going to be falling over myself here, trying to cover as much as I can. I know you girls are really busy and you have a big meeting coming up. And you have previously been on RCR, not with us though. So tell us, or tell our listeners, what is Capiti CAM all about? What alarmist law madness are we talking about here?
Okay, so we're a local advocacy group. We formed probably about early August last year, and I'd say probably the catalyst for that was the infamous Raumati community meeting where the Coastal Advisory Panel came along, and that was the one where we went along and Jim Bolger sort of stood in front of me. Very socially awkward.
Yeah.
And we formed soon after that.
So it's not been long that the organization has, you know,
coming up for a year.
Mm. It's been a steep learning curve.
I bet it has. Mm. But why the very need for, you know, for some of our listeners, you might be familiar names, but for some others, you're new here. So you are on the Capiti Coast and you've had to set up an outfit to, battle some crazy laws that are coming your way. Yeah. What, if I could ask you, Kerry, what is the issue? What is the issue right now, if you had to put it in one sentence, that you guys are battling?
The issue is that we are having some extreme climate modelling being pushed onto us at massive expense to ratepayers for no real benefit. And I was going to get into this sort of much later, so we might want to come back to that. But in 2019, what we became aware of through this process in 2019. Like many councils around the country seem to have adopted the same thing, was the Capiti Coast District Council declared a climate emergency.
Yeah.
From that has fallen out these, this is what we've come to believe, is the adaptation plans. So the council,
They outsourced
a group called CAP, which stands for Coastal Advisory Panel. Mm. Their technical advisors are Jacobs, largely, and some council people. It was Jacobs who wrote the initial report that then the council used to form CAP.
So you are saying the council, once it declared a climate emergency in 2019, it decided it was that big an issue of whatever was.
But I don't know whether it was a direct
result,
but it looks like it's fallen out since then.
So it's morphed into this separate entity. So CAP, the Coastal Adaptation Panel, it is separate from the council.
Coastal Advisory Panel.
Mm. It is separate from the council.
They say they're independent, but they were, from what we understand, they were handpicked by the council.
Okay.
And the council had, prior to that, they had commissioned Jacobs to write a couple of reports at a cost of about $250,000, I believe. And Jacobs used the extreme scenario of 8.5, the high emissions scenario.
High emissions, yeah.
Which is what CAT then based a lot of their work on, which was based on Jacobs and other reports too.
So there's two, three players here. We've got the council that has then outsourced all its whatever plans it supposedly has for the coast to deal with its Armageddon to a coastal advisory panel called CAP. And Jacobs, the name that you take, is a consultancy that is producing these documents at this cost. Did I hear that right, Kerry? Was that $200,000?
It's upwards of $250,000 just for the first one and volumes one and two of Jacobs, because we had to have two volumes. But the actual, so that was, they had the Jacobs report, and then CAP was formed about the same sort of time, and the consultants for CAP are also Jacobs.
And Jacobs,
so talk about
its head office. It's an American company.
Yes.
I mean, they have New Zealand offices, but we are talking of an international giant that operates in dozens and dozens of countries, producing these reports at a cost of about $250,000 upwards.
That's just for the report. And the total CAP process to date, because they've been going a couple of years now, is it's upwards of $4 million, probably getting closer to $5 million dollars that ratepayers have had to stump up. All we've got to show for that is consultancy fees and reports, like Jacobs reports. We're about to produce another report for the council to vote on whether they accept it or not.
Yeah, good old ratepayers are up for quite a few dollars every time the reports are written. And what's mysterious to me, and by the way, ladies, you have a fantastic website with a lot of information on it, considering the time you've been up. So that's just great. Locals have no excuse for being misinformed if they're interested. But what's a mystery to me, having followed climate change politics for 30 or more years, is why this whole thing gained traction in the last few years when it's people have been talking about it in the wings for years, but all of a sudden, in the last sort of 4 to 5 years, this just gained a new set of legs. And was it because you had some councillors or that came from sort of the left of politics in the and even, dare I say it, Extinction Rebellion type people coming onto your councils or young activists? Because there's something that's triggered this, and it's not just in Kapiti, by the way, it's around the country. Something has got into the mindset of the minister of the time and the ministry, and it's just pushed the go button. It is a mystery how I've just basically shot myself in the foot. I'm saying it's mysterious, but that's what it says to me. Is that how it happened, do you think?
Well, I think from what I've read and what I've studied from this process, I think it comes back to that announcement of the climate emergency. It was like they put a stake in the sand at that point. And lots of other councils, I think I read briefly, but I should have looked it up again, it was over 50 different councils around the country also announced a climate emergency in 2019, while we were all busy, you know, worried about something else that was happening in that year.
Yeah. Yes.
Distracted.
And we did have the student climate strike. Led by someone from the council here at the time.
And she was at school at
during college.
Yeah.
So that's been a big push. But we're not the only council, of course, but it is quite a flavour here. And so CALM very much is trying to focus on, we like to say it's climate realism, which is what CALM's talking about, versus climate alarmism, which is what the council's undertaking.
You know, as councils around the country have been cash strapped for eons now, I mean, it's not unique that this year is rate increases look massively out of whack with reality, but this is not new. It's been happening for at least 30 years, except they seem to be getting worse, these expansive rate increases. Why would you think that councils would want to expand their remit, grow the business, when they know they've got ratepayers clearly pushed to the edge trying to fund rates that fix roads and you know, potholes and footpaths and water infrastructure? What is it that has got them to the next level of job creation effectively?
Yeah, it's certainly very strange that when we have a cost of living crisis, that the rates are going right up. They're becoming unaffordable for people. And we've also got the problem because the climate emergency was declared, insurance is now a problem as well. And we know people, many, many people on the coast whose insurance has been cancelled. There's at least one insurance company, apparently, that won't insure here anymore. And we've also got, which the council has kindly done for us all, they've placed references to the Jacobs report on everybody's limb reports, which also affects your ability to buy and sell a property, mortgages, refinancing, and of course the big one, insurance. So there are many people who soon won't be able to insure their properties, which is a great concern.
It's outlandish. It's outlandish from your local councillors allowing the council to play this card, in my opinion, where they basically are expropriating your property, but still feeding themselves, their staff and their consultancies on the side. I mean, yeah, it just doesn't seem fair. And so what is it? Surely there's got to be some councillors and some staff members who really do want this to just have the lid put back on it. How does it keep bubbling along, and the pressure you people at your group and others have put on hasn't turned, sorry to put it in this parlance, turned the tide? Because it's clear to me that the tide has to turn. You can't keep telling lies forever. And clearly the lies are coming from the other side with the extreme RCP 8.5. We're told everywhere that it's an implausible scenario.
And not to be used for planning purposes, but yes, that's exactly what they effectively are going to be doing. It's worth noting too that this cap process was not a statutory requirement on councils. They chose to do it.
Yep. They chose to do it.
They chose to do it with very little consultation. I mean, it had already been going a good year before we even heard of them.
I know. And it was only under wraps.
It was only because a friend went to a local meeting where there would seem to be very few residents, but a lot of people from council and Jacobs were there answering the very four basic questions that they wanted answered. And then sometime later we kind of learned about the whole Delphi process where it's you know, lots of
they decide two pre-arranged options.
They sort of channel the questions
manipulation
where they want you to go.
Yep.
Yes, that's probably not answering your question very well. It's hard to believe that they're doing this to us, really.
Yeah.
And something I'm beginning to understand, something's really changed in the councils. Not that I've really had much to do with them in the past, but something has definitely changed. They're not listening to us.
No.
They do not want to hear from us. They're quite dismissive, although we've picked up a bit of kudos in the community now. So they sort of are starting to have to
listen to us a bit more.
I'll be a little bit, you know, for instance, we've been going to all the community board meetings. Well, that is just
that's an education.
Unbelievable. I had no idea that they were awful, actually. Just awful. There shouldn't even be the word community in there. There's the only one that we did go to is our local one, and he's the person who takes that is being as inclusive as he can be within the rules of the community board. But we've been to somewhere you're effectively muzzled as the community. You're not allowed to ask questions, you're not allowed to speak, you're not allowed to put your hand up. It's honestly, it's like being treated like you're back in primary school, isn't it? It's a shocker.
It's like going into the principal's office. So many times you go along there, and what CALM does is, because I'm the spokesperson, we usually read a statement and then we get it tabled, so that the counsellor and all the board members there can't turn around and say, well, we didn't know anything about this.
Yeah.
It's very obvious. The moment we walk in the door, the eyes are sort of rolling. And even when I'm speaking, they're on their phones. And you get the feeling like, no, there's no engagement. And then there's no questions asked. So I might be talking about, you know, managed retreat. People potentially having to leave their homes. And as soon as they finish talking, sometimes it's like, well, thank you, Tanya. You can sit down now. It's like, well, don't you have any questions for me? I mean, this is a really important issue. And it's like nothing. They're saying, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
It's vintage. It's common, I have to say, Tanya. I've been submitting this sort of way for years and different councils locally and nationally, and you know they just want you to see the back of you. Know they want to see the back of you. It even gets so bad where they ask the media to leave the room sometimes when you're speaking, because they don't want the media to report you, or they just sort of give them a sign to sort of, I've seen all the tricks played, and it's dirty, and it's not something that we should ever have to be concerned about, other than speaking for truth. You know it to be. That's all it should be. So clearly there is an agenda that's coming through the council, from the ministry to the council down to the ratepayer base, and it's not right. The drop-in sessions or the local community sessions, or we have everyone gather around a table and you have one of the staff members indoctrinate you, basically. We've seen that nationwide. Yeah. You know, the game's up, though, in my opinion. The game is up for this stuff. There is local groups forming all around the country to take on this stuff. And what I need to perhaps hear from you soon is whether the new minister, is giving a directive on this sort of stuff. Like Simeon Brown, is he really stepping up to the plate? Because he seems to be on many things. Has he stepped up to the plate on this RCP number, getting it back down to common sense?
We've not seen anything as yet. Well, certainly nothing coming through the council. I've seen one media kind of release about, I think it was from him, saying that councils shouldn't be using extreme modelling for planning purposes, which is exactly what our council are doing. Well, are trying to do, will do if they vote. Vote on this process.
So the subtle directives there, he just needs to be more upfront and say, this is the numbers you'll work to, get over it. Don't want to hear anything more about 8.5. Put it to bed and get back to
what we need to hear. Just stick to the 4.5, which is a much more likely scenario going forward. We need to drop the climate emergency. There isn't one. It's just nonsense. And I think the thing that I find most upsetting about that is that we now have whole generations of children that have climate anxiety, which is a very real thing. They feel no hope for the future. Many of them, you know, and it's a crippling kind of anxiety, because it's this relentless messaging from the council, which sort of gets infiltrated through the school system, or it's coming from the media, or, you know, the parents believe that, you know, it's going to be we're going to be in an apocalyptic
situation.
And to me, that is really it's totally immoral and patently false. And it's causing very real harm to the mental health of children and young people who do and adults who don't understand the actual climate science.
We've called it out on the show many times, and I have no hesitation in calling it, actually, it's an abuse. It's unacceptable abuse of our children. Going back for one moment, and then Jaspreet, I'll let you get in, because you're not getting much action at the moment. What is it about your area? Is the support for the CAP output coming from outside the borders that are most affected, or is it people from within your areas? Because it just seems a little odd that that would, when you've got people on the coast with the same information, that you would have anyone agreeing with what CAP is putting out.
Yep, that's a very good question. I mean, Jacobs is a big international company. As far as I know, did they even come here to do this the study on, you know, we have a particular coastline that's quite unique, even in this country, but it's quite unique around the world. And a lot of it is not all of it. Some of it's eroding, but we have a lot that's an accreting coastline. They also did things like we've had a seawall for a lot of the coastline, which has been there for about 40 years, well past its use by date, but it's still doing the job. And in the Jacobs report, they don't even account for that seawall, which is why we've ended up with these adaptation zones, which go 2 kilometres from the coast inland.
Yeah, back to the old main road.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And I read somewhere, and I correct me if I'm wrong, that they've overestimated sea level rise by 550% based on actuals. Is that true?
That's what we've seen too. Yes. A lot of what the council are also using is, along with the Jacobs report, is the Sea Rise Project, which was...
I think Victoria University of Wellington, they were partners in there.
Comes from, but they use a lot of satellite data instead of looking at the tide gauges, which have been here for, I think, about 100 years.
Yeah.
Wellington tide gauge is a very old one, and it's showing, I don't know, 2 millimetres a year for the last 20 years or something. We're talking, you know, minuscule.
It is stunning. They are asking you to disbelieve your own eyes, the evidence that's in front of your own eyes. Are these meetings, when you present to the CAP, the Coastal Adaptation Advisory Panel, or to your council, are these all, or to your community boards? Council meetings are, of course, recorded, but are these other submissions, are they recorded? Do you have videos and so on?
We have audio, so after a community board meeting, you can actually order the audio. And so what we do is we sometimes go through those. We do transcripts of them. You can actually, when the Coastal Advisory Panel are doing a presentation, which we can't actually ask questions about. When they do those, we actually take notes, because there's some really interesting stuff that comes out of them. So you can go back to the audio and refer to them.
That is sounding really odd to me. The audio has to be ordered. You have to request a copy.
We have to ask for it.
Is it not put somewhere on the council website or somewhere that anyone can just get it?
You have to ask for it.
And when the Coastal Advisory Panel, when they sit, you are saying you're taking notes shortened, and I'm pretty useless at stuff like that. Again, that's not a video recording of their proceedings available?
No video recordings. And if you want to actually record anything, you have to ask permission from the chair, and it's not always given. They seem to be quite sort of secret squirrel.
This beggars belief. Your Coastal Advisory Panel is essentially doing the work of council. You know, it's been a dedicated group that is doing council business. And unless, from what I understand, unless it's something confidential, contract negotiations or something, be it a council meeting or a council workshop, by default, the Auditor General of New Zealand has said they have to be open. Mm. And these are not open then. They have to be... And how long, how long have they been going without anyone knowing?
They've been going for a long time. And the funny thing is, when we first started going along to these meetings, there'd just be a few chairs put out because no one ever used to go to them. But when we started going and letting our supporters know that, you know, these meetings were on and that maybe the coastal...
Yeah, worth coming along,
giving an update. It's funny, you walk through the door and there's now a huge throng of people behind you, and so they're putting out chairs and thinking, where did all these people come from? They used to get away with a lot more back then when no one was actually ever listening. And this is what I would suggest to anybody around New Zealand who is going through the same thing we are, because we're the first cab off the rank. So we're the testing ground here. So if people are in another coastal area, start going along to your community board meetings. Pay attention to what's going on. Ask questions, or if you're allowed to. But once you start showing interest, you find out all sorts of different things.
I think most importantly, you need to gather like-minded people around you, because there's so much. You just can't go to every meeting.
No, you cannot.
Read every report. So you need, lots of eyes and ears on the ground to really look at what the councils are doing and, look at their climate emergency plan, I would say.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very easy for them media to talk about managed retreat and we've had cyclones in New Zealand in the last 12 months, or one major one, and then the Auckland example. And it just seems to it's all so convenient for them to just ham it up after those events. Yes.
Every time a CAT talk, their climate scientist brings up Cyclone Gabriel.
Yes.
Which is astonishing.
A storm that happened here in 1976, they're still harping on about that, where unfortunately someone's house did fall into the sea. It was just a freakish storm, but that was climate change even back then, apparently. So.
But the interesting thing is that they shored up this house, and it's got a great sea wall and rocks, and it's been there. They did that in the 70s, late 70s. And it's perfectly fine and hasn't moved, but they use it as a negative thing, whereas we see it's a positive. Like, it's been there 50 years now and it's done its job.
Still going strong.
What I was going to say before about Cyclone Gabriel was, yes, so they always use that as an example that, we could have our own, but they don't ever mention the slash that came out of the hills, which is probably not going to be an issue for us here.
To get an idea of the magnitude of this problem, how many people are affected and about how many properties are affected where you are?
Well, it's really hard to know because they have identified these adaptation zones which go 2 kilometres inland, and they're really only looking at, CAPA only looking at coastal erosion and sort of inundation. They're certainly not looking at earthquakes, which is actually our most major problem. Is we've had uplift. It's been a well-documented climate data that we've got. We've had uplift over the last 600 years, but they're not factoring in any of that. It's just straight-out coastal erosion and inundation, flooding.
So tell me, when you guys go to make your you read your statements, are there opposing groups who come along who read their statements out and want the council to, go even faster? Because I've seen that. I've seen those sort of coordinations happening. There's one group going anti this and there's a pro group lined up. Does anything of that happen there?
No, for the most part, it's just the community board itself. Although there is, as Kerry mentioned, there is a really good one, the Raumati Community Board. They're very open and transparent. They encourage people who come along to ask questions. But with the rest of them, you kind of just have to sit there, and you may as well have sticky tape over your mouth, to be honest, because you'll speak when you're spoken to. The rest of the time, you're just gagged. And it's not democratic at all.
Wow.
Very disappointing.
Yeah, it's interesting. As I talked about before, the controlled opposition, I've, as I said, been in submission hearings where there can be 10 people speaking for a particular thing. They get one and against that suits their narrative, and they'll go with the person that was the one. I mean, you're outnumbered. They have the predetermined view, and that's the problem. So we've just got to break this. I mean, groups like Calm doing the right thing, just slowly breaking this down. And it would be nice to think that some of the perpetrators and promoters of all this stuff could be held to account. But, you know, most of them are getting a wage bill or getting a consultancy with no
That's right.
No caveat. They have to be honest and upfront.
And I think for a lot of people, what I would say to people that might be listening that, you know, perhaps might be seeing something similar happening in their area where they live is get yourself schooled up. Do some research. And there's some really good resources out there. And if I could just mention three that we've used, relied quite heavily on. One is Green Murder by Ian Plimer, the book. Mm. And that's a great resource. It's easy to understand. Even if you've got no real science background or anything, it explains, you know, the historical events really well. The other one is the CO2 Coalition, which is an online I think it's co2coalition.org. And there's a quiz in there on climate facts, which is brilliant. And then go and watch Climate the Movie, The Cold Truth.
It's awesome. Oh, yeah.
And between those three things, you'll have enough confidence to be able to kind of say, you know, confidently speak to science facts and not
allow yourself to be browbeaten.
Mm. Yes, because you need to have some, you know, knowledge is power, and you need to have some kind of knowledge. And if you do those three things, you'll probably have more knowledge about real climate science than most counsellors.
I would say your website is great, capiticalm.com. It's a fabulous website. It's
so we've got all those resources on there.
Yep, your resources, your different links on the website, be it references, be it media, the blog, everything is very well organized for a grassroots endeavor that's only been running about a year. That's some great work out there, and I can see it takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get this done. Because it's usually the same few people, isn't it? The one doing the hard yards and sitting up late and going along to these meetings. It sort of takes over your life.
Well, we had our first community meeting, which we organized, and we delivered the old-fashioned flyers.
Mm.
Delivered 6,000 flyers and put it out on social media to all the contacts that we've got. And we got along 150 people, just over 150 people to that meeting where we had a climate scientist talking, Tania spoke for Calm.
I think I saw that one. Did Sean Rush speak?
Yes, he was there.
Yeah.
We're having a second community meeting.
Well, it's the third one now.
We've had to get a big hall.
Yeah,
good.
So big venue.
This one is the Southwoods big auditorium. So that seats about nearly 500 people.
So what is the date, when your time, please? So
that's going to be next Tuesday. So that's the 14th, and that's 7 p.m. Yeah.
Okay. So Tuesday, 14th, 7 p.m. And this is at, what hall is it?
Southwoods. So where the Car Museum is.
Okay. So should be something else. Should be a place quite familiar to the locals, I'd say. Not someone like me sitting in Southland. Yeah. Right. Dawn, is there anything else you would like to talk about? Something we might have missed?
Well, I've got nothing else other than to say it's great to see the mobilization. We've talked of the Cavity area. You know, the people that you're talking to, Carrie and Tania, it's great to see that mobilisation, because you think of the guests we've had on in the past, like Tom DeWeese, talking about freedom pods and the like, just trying to build this groundswell of support. And you do it around the truth, and hopefully it just bears fruit in the end. I mean, the big thing that I'd hope we can get traction on here for you and for others around the country is get the minister to come out and just say, we're going to put a line in the sand. This has got to stop. Rot, this cost against communities has got to stop, because the communities are going to be no better off, in fact, much worse off, because as you talked about earlier, Tania, the rates and the costs, the cost of living at the moment is just eating people alive. And so we deserve better. You deserve better. The citizens of New Zealand deserve better. Hopefully we can make the minister wince a bit and come out stronger than he has.
Absolutely. And there's nothing bigger than private property rights. And that's what this comes down to, doesn't it? Everyone's, your home, your castle, your things that you counted on are no longer, you can't insure them. You can't get a mortgage. You can't sell them. It might be, for some people, it might be their life savings. And there it is. Gone.
And CAP have recently, they've obtained figures for this follow their pathways process, which includes not all of it is managed retreat, but it seems to be listed quite a number of times. Jacobs have written the figures for them, and it's upwards of $3 billion.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So how on earth can we afford this? We're one of the most indebted councils in the country, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's fun times ahead. Look, I think what we've got to do is help you and other councils and other ratepayers around New Zealand get the traction on this. We're aware, Jaspreet and I are aware of what's going on around Lake Ellesmere in Canterbury. We're aware of what's being talked about around Jaspreet's area and my area, Southland District Council area, the coasts. You're not alone.
Same thing, yeah.
You've just been leading the charge at the moment. I think there'll be more cavalry coming very soon.
Good.
That'll be good. Yeah. It would be great if we could sort of link up with other groups as well, because we can share information. It just makes us all stronger. We've joined forces with Community Voice Australia in Australia, New South Wales. They had a report done by Jacobs as well. So it seems to be following a playbook.
Yes. There are nothing else if not predictable.
Well, we get a lot of information from our contact over there. Yeah, it is. And so if we can help other people as well, I mean, we're struggling to sort of, do what we can in our own area. But if we can help anybody else, we're more than happy to do that.
That is very generous. And for people who are just starting out on this journey, like some around, at South Island, that's a huge help. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. They have a base, a platform where there is already some information there. There's a huge amount of information.
Website and... just start educating yourself and getting up to speed and gathering like-minded people.
and we are making a difference. We know that. There have been some U-turns on certain things that we've been pushing for from council. So we do know that we are making a difference. And we're also starting to call out some of the councillors as well. If they're voting for certain things, then we'll be watching them. I mean, we're going to try and stop the recommendations going to council from the Coastal Advisory Panel. But if we can't and the councillors end up voting on that, we want to know who has voted for it and who has voted against it. Because there's an election year coming up next year.
Absolutely. That's what democracy is. Yeah, we need accountability. So, listeners, I think we'll let Kerry and Tania go on their way, carry on with the day. But their website is capitycom.com, and they are doing some sterling work in fighting the climate law madness, which Dawn sometimes refers to as crimate. We are very grateful for your time today, ladies, and no doubt we'll have a great meeting, and we will catch up with you soon for another update on how it went and where to from here.
Thank you
so much. Thank you so much for joining us on Greenwashed. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.